Dark wings.
Dark words.
The Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 5, episode 5.
Kill the boy.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Chuck Davis, and with me this week are...
I'm your Craig McCallie.
Mike Hergert.
Chris Voorhees.
All right, fellas. Season 5. Episode 5.
Halfway point.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Things are happening, moving fast. It feels like some of the stuff we predicted this season, just from our book speculations and whatnot... And all the incessant grayscale references have come to fruition.
We get it, grayscale.
They kind of beat us over the head with that the first couple episodes.
I didn't expect to see, Jorah just rowing his fishing boat all the way to the smoking doom of Valyria.
You know, I was going to request a little geography breakdown this week, because how could they possibly beat a Valyria already? Isn't Valyria like on the other side of the continent from where they started?
Just like I was saying, I mean, like Tyrion could show up at the wall next week. It's
right.
Just like, you know, put him on a transport and then you can be anywhere.
3 weeks later.
I mean, it's fuzzy on purpose, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they came anywhere near Valyria in the books, actually.
I mean,
the fact that they're going to pass right through them to... hide from pirates.
Like it's en route to Meereen somehow. Yeah. It's strange.
Because where they're worried about pirates in the book is Dagger Lake or whatever.
Right.
And that's kind of...
That was
I think that's kind of more where...
On their original route.
Yeah.
That was kind of more the river travel they were doing. And the books always sort of allude to Valyria as like boiling oceans and just like...
It's, smoking sea.
Yeah. It's like, you know, going near Chernobyl or something. You're it's like a no man's... zone.
It still looked cool, but yeah,
it did look
yeah.
pretty cool
because it was basically the cradle of civilization for George R. R. Martin's world, basically.
Right.
It's like
it's an unexplained
ancient
supernatural
ruins of ancient
disaster
Rome kind of a thing, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some that's they don't really know what happened. They refer to it as the doom,
right?
Yeah, they do. It was a volcano.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Like Vesuvius.
That's what I mean.
Really?
That's kind of what I gather from what they talk about.
I mean, wasn't it?
Well, it was like a supernatural induced volcano, perhaps, or it was kind of more like
maybe they don't have volcanoes.
Karma coming back to bite them in the ass for all their dragoneering or whatever.
There's no plate tectonics in the
little cosmic get back.
Maybe just a little R'hllor indigestion. I don't know.
R'hllor's going down.
But, presumably the end of the Age of Valyria was maybe sort of the waning of magic in the world. You know, all the sort of stuff disappeared into legend for many thousands of years. How many thousands of years have the Night's Watchmen been guarding the lands of men? 8,000 years?
Something like that, yeah.
That's a long time.
Many moons.
Even in the books, the chronology is kind of hard to follow. It's like, you know, 8,000 years ago, they built the wall and all this, but it's only been like 400 years since the Targaryens came along and conquered the Seven Kingdoms or something. I don't know.
Right. Well, because they were the latecomers, right? I mean, you had the whole string of the, you know, all the title.
The Andals and the First
Men.
First
Men, the Andals, the Rhoynar.
Yeah.
And the Targaryens come
So the
last,
Targaryens are really kind of meant to be more recent history in the grand scheme of things. But then also they conquered it at the height of their sort of... Well, they escaped Valyria. Didn't they leave Valyria to come to Westeros because Valyria met the smoking doom? Or was that just... Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I've got the encyclopedia at home. I'll
more speculative history.
Pull it out one of these days.
That's what we do. Need the encyclopedia. We'll just make it up.
But in the TV world, Smoking Doom's just a rowboat ride away. And then it's just, you know, a brisk walk the rest of the way to Marine from there.
But, you know, maybe they'll run into a fishing village because I'm sure they'll find help there.
Well, that, I mean,
in the smoking ruins of Valyria.
Sir Jorah's got another fisherman to knock out and throw a couple gold coins on his feet. Take his boat.
Don't want to give him a handshake.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, in the books, you know, it was another companion of Tyrion before he even encountered Jorah. That you were talking about it last week, your memory of the encounter where the stone men attacked Tyrion's crew when they sailed under a bridge, which was nowhere near Valyria in the books. But
it was on the Rhoyne, which is...
Yeah. It was on their river journey.
So kind to clear that up for us right at the beginning. This isn't the Rhoyne. Oh, it's Valyria.
Get your script out.
he didn't exclaim that they were suddenly very off book. but he could have.
Yeah. He could have.
We're off book. Yeah. He looks directly at the camera. We're off book.
I don't remember reading this part. Is that a fucking dragon up there? Where did we get the budget for that?
Cut. Guys, listen. Fourth wall, fifth wall, all the walls. You just broke them all.
I thought...
naked to the wilderness, Craig.
That's a fact.
Nothing between us and the wild but your robe.
I barely have my robe on.
I could barely see the Rhoyne from my robe coming on.
Okay, so there are a couple other things that happened this week.
I reach down. touch. Touch Jorah's wrist.
I got the grayscale.
I liked Tyrion's expression when he saw Drogon flapping by up there, and I thought for sure that they'd have a little chat about it, but the stone men intervened at that point.
You thought for sure that Tyrion was going to give a mighty leap and land on the back of, land on Drogon's back and fly off.
Just give a whistle and he'll come down and
wolf whistle. I am the third dragon rider.
Fuck you, Jorah. Take me to the nearest wine shop.
Now where'd them whores go?
Well, so they didn't allude to Tyrion's, you know, book learning about dragons, but they did allude to his sort of awareness of history. He and Jorah sort of shared their little kind of quoting some prose.
Yeah. Which they do that constantly, just little things to sort of... It's almost like a sop to the book readers, because I'm not really sure that the show watchers are all that interested in remembering that Tyrion is book learned.
Well, they hasn't been mentioned since like episode 2 of the show.
Right.
Since when he's up at the wall.
They pop these little scenes in just to, like, it was when we were talking earlier about the debate at the wall.
Right.
So this was my take on that, right? That was another example of them reminding us of certain characters.
Uh-huh.
And when Jon Snow wants to let the wildlings through, and then, of course, half the watch is against it because they're enemies, and the one guy stands up and says, well, if the wildlings get killed by the walkers, that's just less enemies for us. And Stannis corrects him under his breath. He says... fewer. Corrects us. But the second
part of it... But it's actually more
it,
enemies for you because you're going to have to kill them when they're all undead zombies or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Which, well, you, that's which the you logical
think,
part.
You but, think that would come up in conversation a lot more often if they're actually like...
Oh, yeah. Know. Remember that Army of the Dead?
Right. Yeah. It was like 2.5 seasons ago we fled from the Fist of the First Men and that was really scary and then we just sort of settled into our old routine.
Yeah. But I mean, we can have their army now by bringing these people south, where we don't have to let them get killed and then fight them. But
I appreciated that they acknowledged that. I mean, they're sort of reestablishing stuff that's fallen by the wayside, while other more pressing plot matters had to develop on the show.
Well, so they hadn't demonstrated that Stannis was a complete stick in the mud for a couple. Well, they kind of did with the daughter scene where he almost didn't hug his poor
almost,
daughter.
That's right. So it's like, I'm just talking to you.
But they also reestablished that the Onion Lord is barely literate because he didn't catch Stannis's correction. Stannis's fewer in the
Anabos. You know, I think that whole thing was an in-joke with the showrunners. Probably some, because that's a modern thing to say. You're not going to say that back then.
To correct grammar.
Yeah, well, you know.
I thought it was a little out of place. That's why I felt like it was just crammed in there to remind us that, that stick really is jammed pretty far up Stannis's. But the Onion Lord didn't get it, right? He's like, what? He said less enemies. Because the Onion Lord in the books was pretty...
illiterate.
Illiterate and
on the show,
worried
too.
About it. Because
Shireen taught him how to read.
With the lords, but right. He can't read.
Yeah, he's pretty good at it now.
Yeah.
He is.
He knows his ABCs.
But that was, correct me if I'm wrong, Chuck or Mike, if that was basically...
What about me? Why can't I correct you?
Craig, you never remember anything.
Well, that's true.
Oh, man.
Go on.
Ouch.
No, when that was the crux of John's issues with the rest of the Night's Watch was his preferred treatment of the wildlings in the books. Was that not the case?
Yeah. For the most part, I think.
They weren't just going to flat let them through the wall, or maybe they were.
I mean, they just let them through and they're like pretty much settling.
Stannis intended to
and all
the settle them
castles.
In the gifts.
Yeah, the gifts, and then they've got some of them who want to fight go to all the other castles along the wall to kind of fix those up and garrison those. So,
which they paid lip service to briefly with the Janos Slant's detail that he refused to go do.
Right. I noticed that...
Which they didn't even really explain. But
Alistair Thorne was still there in like the meeting, so I thought he was off to... Eastwatch or whatever.
Oh, right.
Or no, he was Head Ranger, so
Head
he's
Ranger.
Still around.
That's right. That was Stannis' recommendation.
Yeah.
Is to send him away because he's one of your foes. And
instead he made him First Ranger?
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that Jon and Tormund took 30 seconds to hammer out all their...
That's what I was just going to talk
all
about.
All their problems.
Yeah.
Like, from chains to allies and... Right. The blink of an eye.
No time for extended negotiations. We got Walker's bearing.
But they were stern. At least they were stern.
Yes.
Well, they had a similarly sort of convoluted relationship in the book, too. Because Tormund kind of took a liking to Jon when he was a wildling briefly.
Right.
And was properly offended when he turned out to be a, you know...
Still what he said he was to begin with.
A traitor, a double agent,
yeah.
I guess.
Double agent, there it is.
But, so I can't even really remember how that was resolved between them, but Tormund eventually sort of...
In the book. They send the non-existent Val north of the wall, because that's where Tormund still is, and she gets him to come back, and so she talks him into...
She who?
Val.
Oh, Val, the non-existent Val.
Yeah.
So Val is the one, well, yeah, and that's just too much not on the show to even venture down that way. But so there's a wildling that John is, friendly with who is trying to help him reconsolidate the wildlings that have sort of scattered.
Right.
Which is happening on the show, too. But he has to do it in person, according to Tormund's law.
Yeah.
So and they were going to take a ship to go rescue some wildlings in the books, were they?
They're
going to
a horseback ride, to go and tell those guys to come back, and then the boats are going to sail up there. Stannis's fleet, which
because Hardhome
John just says, "Oh, I'm sure Stannis will give me his boats."
Right? Yeah, it was gonna. They didn't even.
And then Stannis
they addressed
like,
that barely. How? What motivation would Stannis have for letting? I suppose bring
Stannis,
back more wildlings.
He wants the manpower. Yeah.
I suppose.
And he doesn't intend to set sail personally again anytime soon, although he might change his mind.
Yeah, he needs his boats back at some point.
It's just a subletting arrangement.
But yeah, I mean so
he's
Stannis or John and
we see him march off towards Winterfell.
Yeah, they're heading off. So, but then John and Tormund are going to go to Hardhome or whatever, which is kind of just around the wall, off of Eastwatch, basically the closest point.
But for some reason, near the ocean, so the boats can gather people up there.
It's right on the sea.
You know, I will give the show one thing about the plot in the north. In some ways, it kind of makes more sense than the plot did in the book. Stannis shows up at the behest of the Night's Watch with his army to fight the wildlings. And then it would make sense, it makes perfect sense for him to then immediately turn around and start focusing on the Boltons and therefore Winterfell. But in the books, they seem to just wander around a lot. Like they attack some other castle.
Well, the Boltons are all over the north, and they're just sort of reestablishing their
thing at Winterfell. Boltons, was it? It was
no Stannis attacks. Maybe not Moat Caitlin, but
no, yeah, it's
Deepwood Mott, maybe
to get the iron.
Yeah, because that's where
are the Karstarks.
Oh,
they're somewhere. No,
yeah, I think that's all kind of. That's in the book, but in the show, that's
the Karstarks. They may be the. Is Deepwood Mott their castle?
No.
Or does he attack that castle because the Ironborn are running around?
Yeah. That's where Asha Greyjoy is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right.
Asha Yara?
Yeah, Asha Yara Greyjoy. We'll never see her again.
Asha's too much like Osha. Change her name. The audience will be confused.
Even though we haven't seen one of those characters since, like, season two.
We saw them in the previously on Game of Thrones scenes, though, this week.
Oh, they showed them?
Right. They showed Rickon, too.
They showed Rickon and Osha. And I think to remind people that they're still alive so that when we see the crispy bodies dangling, we can remember that that's not actually them.
Right.
So that when Theon... you know, apologizes for having killed them, he could have said, oh, I didn't really kill your brothers.
Never. He wouldn't do that.
Theon's not in front of Ramsay.
Theon's extra crispy bodies. The colonel.
Theon's extra crispy bodies.
4 legs, 4 arms.
Put that on the box.
Put that on the box.
Right. So, okay. So things are converging on Winterfell. Brienne got up there. Brienne and Pod are sort of staying in an inn within.
Again, I like what they're doing there. They're taking a wandering, sort of meandering, meaningless plot line and tying it into the main story in the north.
Mm-hmm.
And all with elements that they borrowed right out of the books, right? Her sense of, you know, loyalty.
Duty she and was obligation.
One of the, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She serves Death Lady Catelyn. Death
will not
Catelyn,
release me from an oath.
Yeah.
So they're really, I guess I'm in a backhanded way complimenting the writers of the TV show and that they're taking Martin's vast, you know, dangling plot lines and sort of using them, tying them together to make a coherent narrative. For the first time, because Martin himself could barely do that.
You don't know. He's got ideas. things are happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems to me more like just convenient plot lines to just, you know, keep the characters that they have and put them to good use to keep them on the show. Otherwise, Brienne and Pod could have just wandered around the Riverlands for another 3 seasons before they did anything useful. Yeah. But they're there, and so Brienne gets her message to Sansa.
About putting the light in the...
Who is, like, totally in danger. And it makes just no sense for Littlefinger to have left her in that state. Right. So that really irks me. Unless Littlefinger somehow made a deal with Roose Bolton. Which he sort of did, I guess. He's kind of like, I'll bring you Sansa. Promise not to murder or rape her or anything.
I mean, even Roose Bolton's like, that's how you make alliances, is through marriage, consolidate power.
But I mean, there's the whole thing about him sort of just like saying, you take what you've learned from me, and like, what did she learn other than
How to be a conniving fucker.
I don't know if she really has yet.
I don't think they ever illustrated that. Well, yeah, I know. But he didn't empower her to do anything. She's completely powerless. She's worse off.
Well, but she's not, though. She has her name, right? She's way more valuable to Roose Bolton alive than dead.
I guess so. But, if you think of it in terms of what they did in the books, they just took one of Sansa's former handmaidens and just... Right. Said, all right, this one here, this is Arya Stark. So, this is a Stark, and we're going to marry her, and now we're the Starks, and we're your bosses. I mean,
yeah,
they could do that on the show, too.
Right. Yeah, they could kill Sansa and say, oh, we're just going to...
Who wants to be Sansa now?
Yeah.
I guess so. We had an explanation, too, for the sort of, glowering look of jealousy from the kennel master's daughter.
Miller's daughter?
No, the kennel master's daughter.
Oh, is that what she is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Ramsay promised to marry her, and now she's all pouty. Like,
yeah.
You dodged a bullet there, lady. You should get the fuck out of Dodge.
It's not like she doesn't know what he's all about. She's the one led Sansa right to Theon. It is,
when Kat and I were watching the episode last night, and she bit Ramsay's lip.
Yeah.
And Kat's like, oh, no, he's going to hurt her now. And I said, no, he likes that. Yeah. he's going to get turned on. Yeah, they're good. But then I think both of them happened. He got turned on and then hurt her probably. So pick your battles.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to be a bummer.
What do we think of the whole first? Well, so Miranda comes down then after that and talks to Sansa out in the yard. I guess I don't know how... Miranda knows that Sansa knows. I mean, so she knows apparently who
she knows who Reek
really
is. Yeah.
Well, it's apparently no secret at all. Roose and everybody knows now.
Which, yeah.
Again, was not really the case. I didn't think.
I guess everybody at Winterfell is always kind of like Theon Turncloak or whatever once he gets up there because they all know who he is.
Well, everyone thought Theon was dead until they decided to clean Theon up to help them take Moat Cailin, which was kind of just an afterthought at the tail end of last season. We didn't really see that happen other than him help whatever troops that were still loyal to Robb that were holding that fort kind of lower their defenses or something. Is that what it was? No, they were Iron Irelanders. Sorry, they were Ironmen that were in Moat Cailin at that point.
Right.
Because any Northmen would have slaughtered Theon.
Right.
Given half a chance if they knew who he was. Right, but so from that point forward, everyone knew that Reek was really Theon,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, you're right. So what's up with that complicated father-son relationship between Roose and Ramsay? So Ramsay's just... making a little spectacle of himself at dinner, and Roose is
right.
Doesn't like it, but at the same time, almost accepts it.
Well, he understands. Yeah, I guess basically. I mean, he's a bad guy too.
Roose never calls Ramsay's methods into question in front of anyone.
Right.
Just later.
Yeah, in private he does, but never. Yeah, interesting.
But I would have thought he'd be a little more upset, like sort of letting the cat out of the bag. Like, I thought we were supposed to play nice in front of Sansa, but maybe since Littlefinger and his troops left, it doesn't really matter anymore, and she's just as fucked as Reek or anybody else that's
but
in
then
the
he
thrall.
Taunts him with the soon-to-be natural-born heir from Walda.
I mean, you could see
and
Ramsay
makes little attempt to hide the fact that
he's pissed about that.
He's pissed about it, and he's clearly going to... try to do something
about
it.
But he shouldn't be surprised. I mean, why? What else is Roose going to do with a fresh new bride other than trying to have sons with her?
Well, this is true.
Well, as far as the lineage, I mean, I guess Roose assures him, no, there's nobody. This person won't be in front of you in line for...
He doesn't assure him at all. Well, he gives him a little speech about how he's his son and he needs him to help.
Yeah, you're right. He dodges it.
But he doesn't
but I mean,
make some proclamation.
But now that he's a Bolton, a full-fledged Bolton, I mean, how does it work? We don't know. Or do we know?
Well, I think...
I don't know, but
is it
I would
in question
assume
at all?
Roose could disown him anytime he wanted to.
Right. But the baby a son would technically be heir to...
Whatever.
House.
Dreadfort.
The Dreadfort, yes.
But that kind of, that's what made me beg the question. So he's still, they're going forward. He's obviously needs Ramsay to marry Sansa Stark to establish his hold on the North.
So then he's
but
still...
But then he goes ahead and tweaks Ramsay by talking about, you know, the announcement that he's going to have a son. Why would he even bring it up?
I guess there's something going on there. Point in lying about it, although,
right,
as Ramsay points out, how would you know she's pregnant?
Well, yeah, it was an aside to the audience. I mean, he's letting us know, you know?
Yeah, it's exposition.
Yeah.
But also just kind of shows the sort of uneasy tension, I guess, between those two.
There's going to be something there.
That kid better watch his back.
Yeah, that father better watch his back.
Well,
like, who knows?
That, what's her name? Walda?
Walda.
Well, she better watch her back.
Exactly. No, the kid better watch his...
What, unless the kid never...
On a live back.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
That fetus better watch its back.
Nobody's safe around any Bolton.
I mean, in the book, it's mentioned that, like, if she has kids that, you know, they're not going to survive because Ramsay's going to kill them, basically. That's mentioned in the book. It's like, oh yeah, those kids will never survive. He'll find a way to kill those.
No
off.
Question.
That seems likely. Well, let's see. What we had some goings on in Marine this week too.
Yep.
We see some confusing goings on.
What do we see first? Grey Worm and Missandei.
Mm-hmm.
The weirdest love story ever. The most unlikely love story ever. Yeah. I mean, not in one way. She's super hot. But he... Yeah.
I'm okay. That's fine. That's just young love.
No, but
it's kind of a throwaway subplot, really.
I mean...
They're making something of it.
You think?
Yeah. They want to.
Eunuch.
Come on now.
What?
He's still
Do you
got...
think I'm going to offend someone?
Hey, I'm a eunuch.
I'm offended.
I didn't want to tell you, but...
Yeah. Neither did Mike.
It's a protected class, Craig.
Nah, you're right, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's a little...
Well, I guess what I was referring to is Daenerys's sort of political solution to the Sons of the Harpy problem.
Terrible delivery. How she just comes in and says, well, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to marry you. And then she leaves.
First, I'm going to murder one of your friends.
Yeah. Then I'm going to marry you.
But I'm the head of one of the houses. Well, maybe she
I'll either kill you or make you my, you know.
So, I mean, in the book, that character, what's his name? Hisdar. Hisdar is sort of making overt sort of like...
He's
actively wooing her,
right.
And it's his idea. Right. Like, you know what? Right. If you really want to consolidate your power here, marry me. I'm one of the guys, the great houses. You and me together, we'll smooth this whole thing over. I'll help you rule. I know the
That's
ropes
way better
here.
Than what happened.
Yeah.
Way better.
Why didn't they have that conversation?
Why indeed?
Because yeah. the, I mean,
because
yeah, the, he's they, a simpering fool in
they,
this show.
They had to give Daenerys sort of a decision point. Like, she had to do something where she's not just reacting to things going on around her.
Right. Because in the book, it's a whole discussion. Like, Hisdar's like, oh, I can get the Sons of the Harpy to stop killing people, and she says, oh, if you can do that for 90 days in a row, then I'll marry you.
So. Yeah, see, I like that a lot better.
Well, he says, you marry me, and she's like, okay.
Yeah,
it's never her idea.
No. They gave her a lot more power, I think, in the show than,
I
like...
I think so, too.
She's kind of, like, doesn't really know what to do in the books as much as he...
So she's, in the show, she's the genius who says, this is how I'm gonna sort of put all this conflict to rest. Which is still going to culminate in things going bad in the fighting pits.
And then his reaction, listen, if he was going to go from about to be killed by a dragon to getting to marry Daenerys, he should have been elated immediately.
I think it takes a little while for the PTSD of almost being burned to death by a dragon to wear off.
He may be feeling a little pressured.
Okay.
Or but, messed with. Or, yeah,
certainly
I mean,
a change
not...
in his fortune, for sure.
Yeah.
And the whole crispy dragon-eating scene was not well orchestrated, I don't think. But I mean, I get what they were trying to do, but it's just like... All right. Well, everybody line up right here, and you go over there, and that's where you'll get eaten by a dragon. Right there, a few feet away from us. And then everybody else just kind of chill out here.
Then the dragons are full after one guy. So
and yeah. The guy just
don't overfeed
them. There was no reaction really from the people.
There wasn't.
It was just silence. They were just watching the dragons tear that flaming body apart. There
and
was
plus
no
the two halves of that flaming body stayed alight like a torch too. Yeah. I was just like, right. Is there oil in this body? What's going on? That's a minor nitpick.
She picked the oiliest one to push forward.
He had a lot of flammable like perfumes on. He was a sun shell.
I'll take it.
Here, everybody put on this Axe body spray before we go downstairs.
But yeah, there was a real lack of reaction.
It was.
It's just like...
Yeah. Well, the dragons weren't really there. That was all movie magic.
You don't know.
Those actors.
There's a dragon unit.
At least somebody got roasted. There had to be somebody was going to get roasted down
That's
in that
what
dragon
you
pit.
Yeah.
Well, so it illustrates that Daenerys is still trying to play it off like she controls the dragons.
Right.
But also that she can be in the same room with them and not lose her cool, I guess, which is a growth from a couple episodes ago where she ran scared for her life.
Didn't she say something like, well, who knows what they'll do? Maybe they'll kill you, maybe not. We'll see, because they do what they want. But she was really thinking, fuck, don't kill me.
Right,
don't kill any of my people. Don't, you know, don't. Help, come on.
Hey, at least they're both still chained up on the show.
Yeah.
In the book, by now, they've like both broken their chains and are just kind of
Yeah, they
loose,
can't go anywhere near
the cavern.
The dragon pit.
Yeah.
So, okay, so we predicted the Stone Man encounter that happened. We didn't really predict the Hisdar marriage necessarily.
No, and I thought we were kind of like, oh.
But we knew the Fighting Pits thing was going to happen, so that's all coming together. We knew Brienne was going to show up at Winterfell. I guess we didn't predict the thing about Jon and Tormund going north, but that's probably a good development. Oh, so the other thing we speculated about is... you know, is Sam ever going to make it to Old Town? Or in the books, he sets sail with Maester Aemon and Gilly and Mance and Val's baby.
Yeah.
And they go to Braavos first.
They go to Braavos because, they bring with them like a sort of the minstrel singer, brother of the Night's Watch.
I forget what his name is.
He's supposed to be like one of their new recruiters.
Right.
But they go there and that guy just goes off and gets drunk and gambles away all their money or something. Then they get stranded in Braavos and Maester Aemon is sickly and dying. Yeah. And so does Sam ever eventually make it to Old Town?
Yes.
Okay. I sort of, have only just barely at the end of the book though, right?
Yeah, pretty much at the end.
Okay. So there's a mention of Old Town in Gilly.
Well, there's a mention of
Sam's chat in the library.
They mention Old Town with Maester Aemon, and then right after that Stannis comes down and's like, "Well, read all you can."
Yeah.
So I feel like that'll reinforce that he's going to go to Old Town cuz maybe he needs more books or something like that. I don't know.
Actually, maybe. So they'll skip the whole trip to Braavos. But maybe, yeah. So Sam will just be like, I'll just catch the next, you know, express to Old Town and then just be there the next week.
like they can do.
That can happen. Because honestly, I don't really know what becomes of Sam in George R.R. Martin's world from that point on. But presumably, they put him down. In addition to mentioning Old Town, he says that he always wanted to be a maester.
Right.
And that's where they train the maesters. So maybe Sam will get maesterized while he's down there.
Yeah, that was a stilted scene, like, conversationally with him and Gilly.
Guilty.
Gilly is charged.
That's a great spinoff show right there. Gilly S. Charge.
It's like she becomes a lawyer.
She's a small town sheriff.
Never mind what I was going to say. This is better.
All right, let's write the first episode of that show right now.
Gilly and Shireen share an apartment.
The stone couple.
No. It was a stilted scene. What?
It's good.
It was Gilly gave Stannis the cold shoulder.
Well, she just ran away.
I'm scared of this guy.
We could talk about Stannis and Sam's conversation if we want to.
Well, so yeah, I liked the fact that Stannis was exhibited some curiosity about the nature of the others or the White Walkers, and asking about the Dragonglass and acknowledging that Sam's research would be valuable.
Right. He's more than showing curiosity. He's acknowledging that A, they exist, and that B, they're a threat to the whole realm.
Not what did he say? He quoted Melisandre says, Melisandre tells me that
the dead walk, or
not that an army of dead is coming, but the dead are coming to the wall.
Yeah, the dead advance on the wall or something like
okay.
that.
Okay, so he's planning for that sort of loosely.
Yeah.
Back burner plans.
Yeah. But maybe it's just been too long since I read, but I don't remember any of the main political figures in the realms ever acknowledging the reality of the threat.
Yeah,
from
Stannis seemed still focused on the Iron Throne and consolidating power by reclaiming the North, which he's still doing, but he's thinking about the other thing too.
So how are they going to conquer Winterfell if Melisandre doesn't have a shadow baby to
didn't Tywin
birth
at some point? Acknowledge the threat north of the wall, not the wildlings, but didn't he?
Tywin?
I felt like when he was alive, he.
Tywin doesn't believe in any of that crap.
It's all Grumpkin.
Well, it doesn't matter. He's dead right now, anyway.
Yeah.
I wonder how many secret agents, secret White Walker agents, Varys has up there.
Little birds.
Little white birds.
Little three eyed crows.
Dead birds. Yes. Frozen birds.
Frozen.
What about the conversation between Maester Aemon and Jon Snow, which invokes the title of the episode?
Yeah, so that's real interesting. So Sam reads a little note. Somebody sends a crow to the wall to just inform them about what Daenerys is up to. And Aemon talks about how he's a Targaryen, reminds us that that was a thing. And it's kind of an iffy sentiment. He's like, oh, a Targaryen all alone in the world, all by herself. What's she gonna do? But she's got a whole city and army and dragons. What's, you know,
right?
Is he her
what's he gonna do
grandfather
about it?
Or great grandfather?
No, he is the brother,
like great uncle or something.
He says he's the brother of the Mad King, but he would have been like he's 100 years old,
right? He was older than the Mad King.
The Mad King was
he was older than Aerys.
He's up two layers, I think.
The Mad King would have been a contemporary of Eddard Stark's father.
Right.
So he's an older brother to what would be a grandfather to someone like Jon Snow, age-wise.
Okay.
So or Daenerys, for that matter. So he would be like a great grand uncle to Daenerys or something like that.
I'll allow it.
but in the world of the show, that means something. What do you think they're trying to, apart from reminding us that Aemon is a Targaryen, what is he thinking about Daenerys? Like, he wants to go help her somehow, or like he wishes that he could go help her?
I think he wishes there were other Targaryens left.
He's advising Jon, certainly.
Yeah, I don't know what he's thinking.
That was the only thing. He was a Targaryen all alone in the world.
But he gave up his... I mean, yeah. But he turned his back on his own family. He swore himself to the Night's Watch, and he's been super pumped about that ever since.
Right.
No, I mean, he's a good, loyal...
Night's Watchman.
Night's Watchman through and through. And a maester to boot. But I guess he doesn't quite really latch onto the thing about the dragons. He's just like, oh, poor Targaryen all by herself.
Yeah.
Well, how about the kill the boy, that selection of words? I mean, that definitely means...
Grow the fuck up.
Grow the fuck up. Get rid of, right? Put aside any of your youthful...
Well, what is he telling him to disregard? I mean, John's been pretty willing to make tough decisions so far. He's not been overly sentimental. And I don't think his his reasoning for, you know, letting the wildlings through is sentimental either. I think it's practical, political calculation. Yeah, and that's why Stannis appreciates it.
You're right. But everyone else is like, well, he stuck it in a wildling, so.
Yeah, but their grammar sucks. Fuck those guys.
Because the Jon Tormund thing, he brings up the whole Night's Watch oath again, where he says that the Night's Watch protects the realms of men. And he says, you guys are in the realms of men. You know, our real enemy is these dead guys that are coming from. He's like, you know the real enemy. It's, you know, the White Walkers and the Whites.
That seems like such a reasonable argument.
Nobody else gets
politics. That's this whole show.
Nobody else at Castle Black is like, oh, this is our real enemy. Like,
well, half of them.
Yeah.
Which is 25, basically. So there's still 25 of them that are, you know, conservative. They still are anti-immigration. I didn't realize until I saw the previous scenes that Ollie was the son of the villager that Ygritte killed.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I never put two and two together.
No, one of the Fens killed him.
Some of the Fens.
Well, in the previously, you see an arrow go into somebody, and Ollie looks, and Ygritte's got her murderous countenance there. She shot and killed somebody that Ollie knew.
Well, some of those crew. I mean, I remember the Fen was the one that put the knife to his neck and said, "I'm going to eat your." I'm going to kill your mom and your daddy and eat him. Now go tell Castle Black.
Yeah,
right.
I just when Ollie was there at the battle, I thought he was just another young recruit, not that he was just like a refugee from the recent thing. So that's a little more powerful that he was the one that killed Ygritte. I never got that before.
And a very parallel scene, him standing in the background with the bow, like
Ygritte totally. Was. Yeah, I didn't pick up on that. But that's used to good effect this week. That of all the Night's Watch, you know, for him, the offenses of the wildlings are still pretty fresh and real,
right?
But in spite of that,
and at the end, he's like, "Is that all? Can I go?"
Yeah,
punk.
You're gonna let the people who killed my family in? Fuck you.
Yes, Ollie, I am. Quit your bitching.
Fine.
And go polish my boots. Go get your fucking shine box.
Put some raisins in my wine.
All right. Well, that's the extent of my musings. We had no Dorne action, no King's Landing action.
No Dorne, no Arya.
No Arya. That's right. Week. We'll have all three of those next week, I'm sure.
From what I saw from the preview, yes.
Oh, yes. My preview got cut off.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see the preview either. We're going to have Arya next week.
Yep.
I didn't see it either.
For show.
Outstanding. More sand snakes.
Yep.
More High Sparrow. Buddy Knight storyline.
Yeah, well, I think so.
Will it be open war?
We don't know.
We'll see.
Open war is upon you.
Welp.
We'll see you next week.
Wait, one more thing.
Okay. You say you're one more thing, and I'll put it in front of the goodbyes. There is nothing, is there? There is
nothing. I guess I won't see you next week. I won't be here.
You won't be here next week?
No.
Why's that?
I'll be in Chicago.
Well, you'll do
Chi-Town?
You'll do a remote.
Oh.
That's what'll happen.
Over the phone?
Sure.
You guys will have to find a sub.
Okay. Well, we will.
We'll recruit somebody to swear an oath at the table.
That's a thought.
Guilty.
No.
We don't have to
swear fealty to the rogue.
To the rogue
one.
To the rogue!